from Peoria Public Radio. This is Out and About. I'm Nathan Irwin.
And I'm Suzette Boulay of Arts Partners of Central Illinois. This week we're talking with Christine St. John. She's presenting her one-woman show, Betty Davis, On the Edge at Cornstalk Theater. Performances are tonight and tomorrow at the Winter Playhouse. Christine, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me here. It's a thrill for me to be here. It really is.
So you play Betty Davis in this show at a very interesting time in her life. It's really a turning point in her career. Can you talk a little bit about the moment at which we're meeting Betty Davis in this show and
sure.
what's going on with her?
Sure. You're exactly right. It's a huge turning point in her career. It's make or break. The fascinating thing for me to learn is that she really was at a critical point financially in her life. She had one child that needed permanent care. So she needs these reviews to be raves, or she's finished. This is what she feels. And in the back of her mind, if I need to be back east and become the best secretary I can be, that's what I'll do, even at this age. But because roles diminish for women after a certain age, she also felt this one's got to be good for them to write the next one if it's going to exist. So we open in 1962, October, in the Plaza Suite, her Plaza Suite, as she awaits the reviews from Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. Now, after all my research, and I'm sure someone will be able to tell me one day, I ask only that they say, Chrissy, put yourself in the brace position, because I know where she was. But I've checked multiple sources at her archival collection in Boston, at the Motion Picture Academy of Dramatic Arts Library, and I could only find one source that said, conspicuously absent from the premiere was Betty Davis. She'd done all the promo that week with Joan Crawford, but she didn't attend. And also the director of Whatever Happened to Baby Jane said the first time Betty actually saw it on the screen was after the nominations were finished in the Academy Awards ceremony, but when she came with me to Cannes to see it the following spring. So she hasn't seen it. She's been given a pretty rough ride by the press leading up to it, and she's had a pretty rough experience leading up to the premiere, and she bolts. So it's that hour before dawn when the reviews come out.
Well, and therein lies the title. She is on the edge.
You bet.
How did you pick that title, and were there other titles you explored, or as you wrote it, you think, she's on the edge, I'm going to use that as my title?
Oh, that's interesting. I had a working title for 5 years that I was hooked on, and I never thought it would change. And it actually was in conversation with a wonderful writer. We were coming back from Michigan City, Indiana. It was last February when the new title came. And it was as a result of development and staging and all sorts of things. But it came late. It did come late, the title. And it works.
It feels right. She's on an edge, and you play it with an edge.
Yes. Now, having said that, it's a journey in her past, and it's she talks to us, and I play 11 men, and we walk through her journey as a young East Coast Broadway actress migrating to the West Coast with the advent of the talking pictures. Because the producers out West were soon to discover with this sudden modern technology, you know, tweeting, iPhones, that's nothing compared to the synchronization of sound and silent pictures, nothing. The phenomenon was sweeping the globe. But what the Hollywood producers were finding is that the leading men in the silent pictures, when they got in front of the microphone, they had voices way up here, and they just couldn't quite cut it. And so they had to go out east to Broadway to recruit actors who could walk and talk at the same time. So this huge migration of young Broadway talent was brought west. So we take that journey, as well as cutting back to Betty waiting for the reviews.
Now, you said that you've been researching and working on this piece for several years now.
Five.
And I'm just curious how that process works. Did it get written in stages, and have you been taking it around and workshopping it, in a sense, to figure out what works, what doesn't work, what needs to be tighter, what needs to get fixed?
It was the most amazing journey, and I think if I knew what was in front of me, I wouldn't have. It was daunting, but the reality of it is that it was slow and painstaking, and it was 5 years. The inception of the idea itself came November 19th, 2009, in Soho Square in London. And it was first research. Read everything you can, every book, biography, autobiography, everything. And that was 4 months. And then you make the note cards, because how do you absorb it all? And then came what's called the treatment or the Bible. It's a language I didn't even understand. And it's the book of the story. And when you get that airtight, I was told, your script will just almost write itself. It's the ABC, XYZ, and everything in between of the story. But without it, you write and you'll come up against dead ends and roads that lead nowhere. You've got to have a good, clear Bible. And that took from April until August of 2010. I wrote the first draft in September 2010, showed it to someone I trust, gave me notes, and I did a second draft, and then one more round of notes, and then the third draft I was able to send out, and that went out to everyone. And that was 120 pages with a first act of 72 pages. I point this out because my entire play now is 23 pages. So, yes, that became quite a journey, and then became a process of working with someone for 2 years on structure and trying to figure out, here's the story, but what is vital and where we maybe got a bit lost. And then at the end of that journey, I really did feel that my voice I was in danger of losing my voice to someone else's. And my core scenes were still there, but I had to, again, move on a different path. And then I edited and put back my scenes the way I wanted them. That was on takeoff from Heathrow to Chicago one Christmas, a year ago last Christmas. And then began a new journey with new producers and directors and seeing if you could have a meeting of the minds. Oh, it's quite an adventure, I tell you. It really is. When you're not a writer, all you want to do is act. But you know that the last play you did was the last play you're going to do because the parts simply aren't out there. But the core scenes from that original 120 pages are still all there. Isn't that interesting? I mean, there's some development, of course, a lot of reshaping the clay, as it were. But it's a phenomenal journey. And the one thing I would say about writing that I have learned, my husband's a writer, a professional writer. And even with that, 24 years of living with a professional writer, and as an actor all my adult life, I somehow thought, and this is watching the process, do we all think that writers put the ABCs in a great big vat and shake it up and pour it out onto the page, and there it is, The Glass Menagerie, Act 1, Scene 1.
Perfecto.
Oh, it's not like that at all. It's really quite I keep using the word journey, but it is.
When you talk about the writing, I was also thinking of your voice. Did you have to pull a Meryl Streep on yourself by getting a Bette Davis voice down at all? And about it's going to be a bumpy ride? I mean, any of that kind of stuff?
I hope I did. I sure hope I did. I've had some wonderful feedback. But what I determined is that there is, of course, great drag artistry out there. And that is part of the Bette Davis Joan Crawford story that I have found not much substantial evidence in that. But that's another part of the story. I'm not that. Mine is not an impersonation. Mine's an interpretation. And it comes from inside out, not outside in. And I hope that I have enough. But what I also found is by watching the films, I'm watching her be someone else, not be Bette Davis. And that can be a little bit disappointing to everyone who wants to see the those signs of her. But I watched enough Dick Cavett interviews and Jack Parr and those things from the era that I'm playing her. I tried to avoid the later years and focus just on that era. But it's interesting because you want to find the woman, not the character she plays. And I was down a long road before I realized that Margot Channing isn't all from All About Eve, isn't Bette Davis. I mean, when I held her diaries and her photographic albums in my hands, and I saw that she was really a PTA mom and was going to probably be the best PTA mom. She was organized, and her kids had great Halloween costumes, and she was an archivist herself and a mom. And there was another facet to her personality that hasn't really been told. And so I really was focusing on internalizing rather than doing the drag artist, which I knew I couldn't compare it to. And as Bette Davis said of this, she said, "They do me better than I do myself." Wasn't that marvelous? But I did have a lovely thing happen in Michigan City. It's terrible to blow one's own trumpet, and I don't mean this at all, but it was very moving for me. An elderly, very elderly woman came up to me after my world premiere with photographs of herself with Bette Davis, and I had been told that she knew her, and she took my hands in hers and said she would have been so proud. So that to me was, wow, that's cool. That's so cool. And so I was so moved by that, I can't tell you. So if she saw something that reminded her of her old pal, then, you know, maybe something's worked.
Now, it's interesting that in this moment that we're meeting Bette Davis, she's confronting a problem that a lot of actresses come up against, which is that when you get to be 40 or 50 years old, the roles dry up. Mm. Is that still a problem that persists? Is that something that an actress living and working today still comes up against?
Sadly, I think more so. I mean, if we go back in the last, say, 40 years, just as an example, in the film The Graduate, Anne Bancroft is actually 3 years older than Dustin Hoffman playing Benjamin. That's the reality. There's a film, I can't think of it off the top of my head, about a Greek god, Colin Farrell or Colin Firth is in it, and Angelina Jolie is playing his mother, and she's actually younger than him. Charlton Heston's mother in Ben-Hur, they had just finished playing husband and wife in a show on Broadway when she was cast to play his mother in Ben-Hur. Now, those films are going back a few years, but to answer your immediate question, I would say all we need to do is look at the credits at the end of a film and ratio them men to women, and then ratio them 40-plus women. And it's a phenomenon. And in my book club in London, there's some very powerful women in the theater scene in England, and they're treating it as a social issue because women after a certain age are the disappeared. And it's dangerous because here we are. I do want to emphasize to Class of 72, where are you, Central High School? Get those tickets for Saturday night. There's a lot of comedy in this show. There's a lot of comedy. Because it's funny what happens, a lot of the situations we're in and in these strange encounters in this mad world called Hollywood, certainly in the early days of talkies. It's terribly funny because actually no one knew what they were doing, and men under blankets with the sound equipment were passing out and having all sorts of difficulty because no one knew what they were doing. It was all new and it was fun. So
we've been talking with Christine St. John about her one-woman show, Bette Davis, On the Edge. Performances are tonight and tomorrow at the Cornstalk Winter Playhouse. Thanks for being with us and break a leg.
Oh, thank you so much, and thank you, Cornstalk, for having me. Thank you for today.
And Nathan, tomorrow and Sunday, the Prairie Folklore Theater presents their historic Springdale Cemetery tours featuring portrayals of several crowd favorites. Characters include Robert Avery, Lydia Moss Bradley, Joseph Petard, and Phoebe Buehler, among others. Shows will take place at 2 and 4 p.m. on both days, so plan to stop on by.
And the First Federated Church of Peoria is presenting a concert of Afro-fusion music with Daniel O'Kiror. It supports the Wanawamola Home for Boys in Kenya. The concert is Sunday night at 6 o'clock in the Life Together Center on the campus of First Federated.
Out and About is a production of Peoria Public Radio and Arts Partners of Central Illinois. Each week, we connect you to the arts community by talking with local arts leaders and performers.
And if you'd like to learn more about Peoria Public Radio, find us on the web at peoriapublicradio.org. I'm Nathan Irwin. This is Out and About.